And we're heading now to speak to James Trapp on his book, Chinese Proverbs. And good afternoon to you, James. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Dave. You?
Yeah, lovely, thank you. Well, let me just congratulate you on such a great-looking book and a great-feeling book as well. It's a real masterpiece. So it's a lovely book to hold in your hands. So let's just start by saying that.
Yeah, well, I can't take any credit for the design, I'm afraid, but it is beautifully done with the sort of traditional Chinese-style binding, which gives it a sort of presence, I think, yeah.
Now, I think that a lot of us think we know Chinese proverbs. We've heard people quote it and who maybe know them more than us, and maybe you know one or two. But this is quite, I should imagine, more than you've actually got in this book, but in general. But it's great to look at these Chinese proverbs and how they actually link up to English ones and actually the artwork that goes with it. There's a lot to compile all together, a lot to look at, isn't there?
Yeah, there are lots of elements, and it is nice that some of them do seem to mirror English sayings that we're familiar with. Although sometimes that can be deceptive. There's one in particular. I'm not sure if it's in this particular book, but which is the equivalent of our shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. Whereas the Chinese version actually it says the same thing, but it means you're wise. To learn from your mistakes, which is really a very different meaning from our one. But generally, I know there are a number of the same. But I think there's a lot more depth in the Chinese Cheng Yu, these four character phrases, because so many of them refer back to historical episodes or to philosophy and other texts going back as far as the 7th, 8th century BC. So they carry a huge weight of meaning within these four characters.
Well, just tell us a little bit about the art that goes into this and the Chinese wording here, because it's something that obviously is very alien to the English mindset, the British mindset, or the Western mindset even. There's four characters, isn't there? And, of course, for most people, like lay people like me, who look at these, would mean nothing to look at them without the explanation that goes underneath in your book.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole, you can go on talking about Chinese characters, but essentially Chinese doesn't have an alphabet. It works entirely in these characters, which were originally, if you go way back, many of the original characters were actually pictograms, rather like Egyptian hieroglyphs. They were illustrations of what they meant. But over the centuries, even millennia, as writing developed, they became more complicated. And so there are very few that are still pictograms, although there are still elements of that in some of them. But each character stands for not just a word. It stands for a kind of almost for a concept. So in many cases, a single character can have quite a number of different meanings depending on the context in which it's used, or the combination of characters in which it's used, which sounds horrendously complicated, but actually it's not as bad as it sounds.
And I suppose that does happen, not with pictures, of course, so much in English, but that does happen where we have certain words that can mean quite a few different things. So you got a dog there.
sorry about that.
Oh, he's live on the radio across Europe. So brilliant. There must be, if you were to look at these pictures, are you able to yourself know what they mean? Is it difficult to learn? Is that something you've tried to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're learning Chinese, unless you just want to learn spoken Chinese, you have to learn the characters, otherwise you can't write. So, yes, and the only way to learn characters is to keep practicing them, keep writing them. Even the Chinese have to do this.
Yeah.
So it's quite a laborious business. It's made much easier these days by word processing, because you can type, if you've got any computer or even your mobile phone, you can set it to Chinese and you can type in a romanized version of the sound and it will come up with all the characters. It's no longer absolutely necessary to sit down and learn how to write them stroke by stroke, you have to be able to recognise them, certainly.
Do a lot of these sayings come from a particular period in Chinese history, or are they strung out over many centuries?
They're strung out over quite a number of centuries, but many of them, particularly the historical ones, will go back to around to between about the 8th century and the 4th century BC, when there was the birth of classical Chinese literature. So they're referring back to the writings from that period. Many of them go back to then, to the philosophers of that time, of the 7th and 6th centuries BC. Some of them are more, so only a couple of thousand years old. most of them are fairly ancient.
Yeah. Are a lot of them, like in our Spanish, of course, has a lot as well, so I'm picking up those as I go along. Are they used generally today as part of everyday language across China? Is that in the Mandarin and so on? Is that something that they would use?
They'll be known by millions of Chinese. They tend to be used more. Most of them tend to be used more when you're writing rather than when you're speaking, because actually a lot of them are very archaic, yeah, in their form. But there are some that are in common use. I think there's one in there which is the phrase. It's Zixiang Mao Dun. Which means a self-opposing spear and sword. The story behind that is that there was a supposedly a merchant. I think it's from a second-century philosopher. There was a merchant in a marketplace who was selling both shields that couldn't be pierced by any spear and spears that could pierce any shield.
Wow! Yeah.
And when he was challenged about this, he couldn't offer any explanation. But the half of the phrase, the two characters were spear and shield, Mao Dun, now are actually part of the language, simply meaning a contradiction or a dilemma.
Yeah, it's there's some great ones. I wanted to ask you the question as well, because this came to mind earlier on. It might just be a name of a film. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Is that one of those or not?
Yes, I believe it is, and it's one that essentially means hidden dangers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Being aware of hidden dangers.
Well, there's one here which caught my attention. Now, what I love about this book, for people like me, you made it very simple, and you've actually given us kind of the way even to pronounce the Chinese written down in an English, with Western words format. So I'm going to try and say this one. Porfu Chun Joe, and it basically means break cauldrons, burn boats. And this one basically means burn one's bridges, pass the point of no return, go all in. Basically, go all in. You're in there.
Yeah,
now.
That's right. And so it's actually, I mean, it is very similar to our phrase, burning your bridges.
Yeah.
And that's actually, that comes from one of the other rich sources for Chung Yu, which is, it's a historical work called the Shiji, the records of the Grand Historian, written in second century BC. I think it also actually goes back further to another work that some of you may be familiar with, The Art of War, Sun Tzu. Yeah. It describes how when the king of Qin, the first emperor, the man who built the Terracotta Army, was setting out to conquer the rest of China.
Yeah.
And he besieged a particular city near a river, that's right. The opposing general who came to the rescue of the city, once they'd crossed the river, ordered that the boats be smashed so they couldn't retreat, and that they overturn all their cauldrons and break them so that they had no food unless they rescue the city. So it means sort of cutting off all options except to go all out for victory.
And I must say, very well done, James, because a lot of times I have people on and I was throw them in at the deep end with one there, and I don't know how many you've got in this book, Proverbs, but I just picked on one there which is 48 pages in, and you managed to answer that question.
Fortunately, it was one that I remember. sure you could catch me out if
well,
you tried.
Well, I won't do any more then, just in case. You're looking good at the moment, James. it really is a phenomenal book. And the actual art of the words is really just fantastic, and almost it's so exotic as far as the kind of British mindset, Western mindset is concerned. And yet there's so much meaning behind them as well. Will you see these written down on billboards, signs? Are they still, as I said, you said that they're used more in writing rather than in...
These particular sayings are used more in writing. The characters, this is standard. This is what you'll see all over China, except there is actually, these are written in what are, all the characters in this book are written in what's known as traditional style or full form characters, which is why some of them look so intensely complicated. Yeah. But in the 1950s and 1960s, the Communist Chinese government realized that this, the complexity of Chinese characters was a hindrance to literacy. And so they actually, over a period of about 10, 15 years, introduced a system of simplified characters. So some of the characters remained the same, but some of the more complicated ones became simplified to make it easier to write. And for instance, the Chinese character for room, Ting, is currently written just using four strokes of the pen. One, two, three, yeah. The old form used 26 strokes.
But we
use the full form characters here because they are, I think they're that much more beautiful to look at. They're also the form of character still used in Taiwan, to an extent in Hong Kong, and by most overseas Chinese communities.
Wow.
Singapore and Malaysia.
And that was me thinking Spanish was difficult, but anyway.
That's a myth, you see. Chinese is not as difficult as people think.
Is that right?
It's different.
Yeah.
You have to get in a different mindset and thinking about how you communicate, but it's not as difficult as people think. Though I will say, sorry, once I start talking about this,
that's
I can't
fine.
Stop.
It's just interrupt me. I can tell.
At the moment, most of my work at the moment is I'm translating Chinese novels.
Yeah.
And I sit at my computer and I have this chunk of Chinese all in characters in front of me. And I sort of break it down into sections. So I'll do sort of 10 lines into English. And then I'll look at the Chinese characters and I'll look at the English and I think, how on earth did I get that from that? Because sometimes they seem so far apart. But once you understand what they're doing, how the two different systems work, and you see how they can achieve exactly the same thing, or almost exactly the same thing, in these two completely different manners. And I think that's particularly fascinating and exciting.
What I find fascinating, James, is that, I mean, your book really has got so much commentary on the Proverbs, and yet enough... And not too much that it bewilders you, not too much that it's kind of, what's the word, daunting to read, but it's in bite-sized chunks. But it's almost, you really, as you read through, you pick up some real great Chinese culture and Chinese history there. But what I find fascinating with all of this is the difference in our culture from a British or European, even American culture to Chinese culture. And yet, a lot of these proverbs are as relevant to me right now as they were to a Chinese person hundreds of years ago.
I think that's tremendously reassuring, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, there's no doubt that the Chinese way of viewing some things is very different from ours. And no matter how close we get, there are always going to be certain areas where we see things fundamentally differently. But at the same time, as you say, the human experience, which is what these proverbs are all about, is something that's shared between all of us.
Yeah. Well, I've got one here for the Tory leadership candidates at the moment, and it's Yang Hu Yi Huan. Hopefully, I said that right. Raise tiger, hand down disaster. And it basically means always press home your advantage. Don't give your enemy a break. That's for Boris.
I won't comment on any political things there. But you see that even if they stem from 2,500 years ago, you can still find a contemporary relevance for them. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing about your book. When we get books arrive at radio station, normally I get to take them home and enjoy them. But this one's already been grabbed by somebody else who said, "Well, I want to read that."
I'm sure if you ask nicely, they'll send you another copy.
I hope they do. It's the Chinese proverbs, the wisdom of Cheng Hu. I hope I'm saying that right.
Cheng Hu.
And it's by James Trapp. It's available on our website. If you go to tre.radio, you can order yourself a copy, and the book is fantastic, and it will look good on the shelf as well. So I can't say any better than that. Thank you for coming on, James.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Right, there we are. See, a bit of culture on our show every now and then.